Welcome to Malcolm Reed's How to Barbecue Right, a podcast where we talk about barbecue, share recipes, and discuss all things delicious. And now, here's your host, Malcolm and Rochelle Reed.
Hey, welcome back to the How to Barbecue Right podcast. I'm your host, Malcolm Reed. And as always, I'm joined by my lovely, talented wife, Miss Southern Shell. We got Tyler over running the board for us. How's everybody doing today?
Great. Malcolm, good. I have a question for you.
What is that, Shell?
What's a Schwenk grill?
Well, let me tell you. Schwenk grills is a portable 1,500-degree cooking machine. It uses infrared heat, which is perfect for cooking steaks to perfection in as little as 3 minutes. So you can take a raw steak to fully cooked in 3 minutes on one of these dudes. The Schwenk grill cooks just like those fancy 1,500-degree broiler-type grills that are seen in fancy steakhouses like the Denver Palm, Morton's. Even Ruth's Chris uses these type grills. And that's how they make their millions, Shell.
And there is a link in the description with a coupon code to receive $150 off Schwenk grills. The code is HowToBBQRight. And you can go to Schwenk, that's S-C-H-Wank.com.
Grills.com and check them out. So y'all go check out the Schwenk grills. They're a proud sponsor of How to Barbecue Right podcast.
Last weekend you cooked a wild game contest. Well,
we did.
My team did. You and a group.
What were we called? Friends. All About the Bucks. Because it was a wild game cooking contest. And we partnered. So it was Buck Junkies and the Mississippi Land Bank. We made one team. Well, actually, I think the Land Bank guys were doing it last year. Because last year was the first time they had that event in Senatobia. And it was a pretty cool event. And, you know, they asked us this year if we wanted to join them. And we said, yeah, well, you know, we'll come out there and cook some wild game up for you guys.
It was a great event.
Oh, man.
I liked the little contest.
A little windy.
Oh, yeah. The weather didn't cooperate.
No, it did. It wasn't bad. You needed a light jacket.
I was windburnt. My face was windburnt the next day.
We stayed out in the sun. It was pretty nice all day. But we cooked up all kinds of stuff, Shell.
Mark took first place with the big game category, which he cooked whitetail deer, right?
Yeah. It was a backstrap off a deer that we had shot actually down on. On our hunting land.
Really?
Yep.
Did you get a bite? It was delicious.
Oh, it melted your mouth.
It melted your
mouth. He won that on texture. Because, you know, that's the tricky part. As long as you don't overcook game, it's absolutely delicious. But to get the texture just right, you got to cook it perfect. And it was money.
It was like meat butter.
Yeah. That's what you said. You said it tastes like butter. It's like, yeah, that's deer.
If I know Mark, he probably cooked it some carrot.
Do you think so? Just taking a bite of that from somebody that doesn't eat much wild game, do you think they would think that was deer meat?
No. They wouldn't believe you.
We had several people argue over me the elk that I cooked.
So the elk you got from Wild Game Keepers?
Wild Game Butcher.
Wild Game Butcher.
It's Mossy Oaks Wild Game Butcher, yeah. And I've done some stuff with them in the past, and that's why I had some in the freezer. I had some elk medallions. I had some elk chops, which is like a little porterhouse off an elk. It's got the back strap and some of the tenderloin in it. I had some elk sausages. I had all kinds of stuff. I had some wild boar.
You had some bacon, pheasant sausage.
I had some pheasant sausage. That was good. Did you try it? I had a pheasant bratwurst that I cooked.
No, I did not try the pheasant bratwurst. I tried the elk. So, okay. Is elk always that good?
Yeah. It's one of the best cuts of, you know, types of venison you can cook. I've always... when I've tried elk, I was like, oh, man, this is so good. It's better than whitetail. It's better than the deer we have around here. It's just in a different ballpark.
But it's not very marbled.
That and Axis deer, that's the two best. Like, they are creme de la creme when it comes to eating venison. Axis and elk meat, they are just absolutely delicious.
But they're so tasty.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's just when it's cooked right. Now, if you cook it over, none of it's good to me. There's no in between on deer meat or venison meat. It's either got to be that rare to medium rare or braised. You cook it all the way to where it falls apart. So there's no in between. Like, if you like your stuff on the medium or the medium well side, don't eat venison. Go with something else. Go with the burger.
Why were people arguing with you over the elk?
Because they said it was beef. They thought it was filet mignon. Beef filet mignon. They said, there is no way this is elk. It cannot taste like that. And you know what? So I had all that stuff. It was froze. I put it in a cooler and let it kind of slow thaw out. And then when we got there that morning, I got Michael, who was with us, our son, And I said, son, will you just season all this meat up? Here's some different seasons. Put whatever you want on it.
All up.
But he did them like he was cooking a steak contest. You know, he did all the, you know, he like dry brined it a little bit with some AP and then hit it with some hot rub and then put a little prime beef on it. And I pretty much grilled it all. We let it kind of sit there and, you know, on the cooler and just hang out till I got ready to cook it. And we were cooking that just to give away. I mean, it was a wild game thing. And I said, I love cooking wild game. I'll just cook some samples and let people try it. And there was not a piece of sausage left.
Yeah,
it was that much stuff. Cause you know, everybody kind of brought something and we just had it thrown out. And I was like, well, just fire up a grill, man. I'll go to cooking. And I don't know how many pounds of like wild boar bacon I cooked.
So how did you cook that wild boar bacon?
So it came in like, it had to be 3 or 4 pound slabs. That's why you get it when you order it from Wild Game Butcher.
When and I saw it, I was like, is this a ham?
Yeah, because it kind of looked like a carving yeah. ham. That's what it looked like. It had already been smoked. It was fully cooked. And you could cook it just like, you could slice it up and cook it like bacon in a skillet. But what I did, I didn't really candy bacon it. I kind of seasoned it with a little sweet rub, like the barbecue rub on both sides. And I put it on a rack and I threw it over. We had the Outlaw smoker going. And I put it over, I put some of it up on Top Chef so it'd get extra crispy. And then some of it, I had so much, I was just running it on a regular rack. And it cooked fantastic. I mean, it never gets like super crunchy like you think bacon does and, you know, in the skillet or an oven.
I think if you fried it, I bet it
would.
Oh, yeah.
If you fried it, it would. But I kind of had it to where it was the texture of bacon candy.
Yeah.
But people was like, man, they thought it was like country ham or something like that. It reminded me more of country ham because the wild boar just doesn't have the fat content as a domestically raised hog does. But it's really tasty. It was good.
Yeah, it was really good. I'm not even that big a fan of wild boar.
What was your best bite of the day? What would you have to say?
Mark cooked a speckled
belly goose breast. Yeah.
And it was really good. And that deer, deer.
I tell you what Jamie did, and this amazed me. It was a quail quesadilla with also used some wild boar chorizo that I had. And so he fried up the chorizo on like a little Blackstone, the little travel Blackstone, the 17 incher. And then the quail, it was bacon wrapped quail breast. And he smoked those until they were done and then took them off and then unwrapped the bacon off and then sliced the pieces of quail breast into little strips. And he mixed it with the chorizo and then took a tortilla, blue plate mayonnaise. Now, this is the secret. This is the secret right here. Blue plate mayonnaise with the little silicone brush and spread that on the outside of the case of the tortilla shell. Hit it with just a sprinkle of grande Mexican season. So you use grande gringo and you cook one side and it starts browning up like a grilled cheese and you flip it over, load it with the quail, the chorizo, and as much cheese as you think you could put in it and then fold it and it makes a quesadilla and you cook it like a grilled cheese. So think of a...
So he grills the inside of his shell too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's smart.
Really, so yeah. You get that flavor and it really makes it crispy because the time all that cheese and, you know, chorizo has a little grease to it and the quail meat in there and it was, and he served it with a cheese dip, a queso.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a white queso, put a little pico in there and big spoons of that chorizo, like just in the middle of it. Because if you put all that chorizo in, like you mix it up, it just kind of turns it a pinkish, that doesn't look real good. But if you just float that chorizo over the middle of it, when you dip that quesadilla in it, that was your dipping sauce. And I think he did use like a verde sauce or some kind of green tomatillo salsa or something like that too.
I did take a bite of that quesadilla. It was really good.
That might be the best bite I had of all this. I mean, we had some good stuff.
Yeah. We had crawfish potatoes and.
Mikey did those. He took little like Yukon Gold potatoes and baked them. And then cut them in half and hollowed it out, kind of like a potato skin.
Mm-hmm.
And then he makes.
Did he show up with that prepped?
I think he'd already cooked the potatoes.
Yeah.
I don't know if he. I don't think he baked the potatoes out there, but everything else he made out there.
Yeah.
Because
that would just seem like a really easy step to do at home. You know.
Yeah, yeah. And then his he does a crawfish bread. If you've ever had shrimp bread or crawfish, it's a Louisiana thing, where it's basically like a lot of cheese and then crawfish meat, and it's got the Trinity in it. And you just put it on top of bread and bake it, and it gets all just delicious. Well, he's like, that'll be good in a potato. So it was like a little loaded bite of potato, and it was, man, those were good. He also did, it was a take on shrimp and crab cakes. So he mini crab cakes.
But what was the meat in it?
But
what
it wasn't crab. It was Mississippi farm raised catfish. Or I don't know if he was actually something he caught or. I don't know where he got the catfish. It was, he may have got it from Randy's brother. He might have caught it out of Bridgetown Lake. But it was, so he took that catfish and blackened the fillets on the flat top and then shredded that meat up to where it's kind of like crab, it kind of flakes and it gets flaky like crab meat. Then he made these little hand cakes with it. And then he put those, like took a shrimp and kind of folded, split it a little bit and then wrapped the tail around it to where it was stuffed. And then he cooked those on the Outlaw. And they were really good too. It was a good bite. I like the catfish cake by itself.
Yeah, I did.
With a little, if you had a little remoulade to go with that, man.
Mark also did a cheesecake and it won first place.
It won first place with his cheesecake. It was really good.
What was it? A caramel cheesecake?
Yeah, with some of that little glass his wife Emily makes, like caramel glass.
You did watermelon margaritas.
Yeah, people didn't like them too much. I mean, I think I was like fourth or fifth.
They weren't sweet enough.
There wasn't a drop left. That was the one drink. I made a jug of it, plus a pitcher of it to turn in.
I mean, for me personally, they were delicious.
Yeah. You don't think they were sweet enough? Added more simple syrup. I did. So what I did is I made a simple syrup and I let it cool and I bought all the watermelon I could find at Kroger. It's not watermelon season. It's hard to find good watermelon. I had to buy the one that comes with like cantaloupe and honeydew.
It's like the.
And I separated it out and got all the chunks of the watermelon. And then when that simple syrup cooled down a little, I pureed all that watermelon and then put it in the simple syrup and just let it sit like I would a pitcher of tea and let it just kind of infuse the simple syrup. And so I had a watermelon simple syrup.
Did
and then
you
I strained it through a wire mesh strainer and it was really good. I mean, I guess it could have been sweeter.
I use that. You know how these contests are. You need it to be like super sweet or super salty or.
I should have went by the dip and got some of their watermelon snow cone syrup and used that too. I did add some watermelon pucker, but but where I messed up was I should have just went 2 bottles of tequila. I went 3 bottles of Patron in it and then like a bottle and a half of Grand Marnier.
You couldn't tell.
No. And then lime juice. It's really easy. It's really a good recipe though. And then y'all took it and when you made it, you muddled some mint. And put that in there and shook it up real good with ice and then strained it out into the glasses. And that's how we turned it in with a little cube of watermelon and a lime wheel.
You also did a Bloody Mary.
Bloody Mary's.
What's your Bloody Mary recipe?
I make like a Chicago Bloody Mary, so it's got a little everything in it.
Okay.
I start.
What does the Chicago Bloody Mary mean? Just got a little bit of
it. Yeah. It's not just tomato juice and vodka. You know, I start with a good healthy 2 shots of Tito's and then cracked black pepper. Pinch of cayenne, dashes of Worcestershire, little half teaspoon of horseradish, some olive brine, some pickle juice, some squeeze of lime in it to give it, and some squeeze of lemon too, like a wedge of each. And then I take whatever kind of Bloody Mary mix you want. This was that Morningwood.
That one's my favorite.
But see, they have a spicy deal and they have an original. That's the two I bought, and I did 50-50. So you still got some of that flavor.
Which one do you like the best?
I like the mix. I mean, the original is okay.
Yeah.
It's good. And the spicy dill can get a little hot on you. So it tones that down. But I love that dill pickle flavor in a Bloody Mary.
Too.
I think it just makes it. So you take that and you shake it all up and you strain it because it gets some of the grit out of it. Because I knew they would judge you like if it had too much seasoning stuff in it.
Yeah.
And I hit it with a little of Mark and Jamie's prime beef too. Because that gives it a little umami flavor, that little
prime beef is a perfect Bloody Mary
sandwich. Oh, yeah. We rim the glass with it. That's the secret rimming the glass with, too.
And it's good.
And then we made skewers. So I took meat. Everybody knows what a meat stick is, right? It's like a little meat stick you buy. It's like a little.
So
like a Slim Jim, but I didn't buy the Slim Jim. I spent a little money on a decent meat stick.
So this is something we figured out when we started going to Minnesota.
Yeah.
They would use meat sticks instead of bacon.
Yeah.
And the bacon, every time we've cooked bacon, no matter how crispy we get it, once you stick it in that Bloody Mary,
it sogs it out.
It gets all mushy and it's not a bacon you want to eat.
So we took made a little celery stick and left a little of the greenery on it. I made hung a shrimp. We used a peeling it like a cocktail shrimp, pretty good size one. Made skewers with some cheese and I did some smoked sausage cut up. And it had olive and what else was on there? Peppercini pepper. But just, you garnished it up. I mean, it looked really good.
It's cute.
Good little Bloody Marys. They almost won. You know what got what beat us? The booth set up. We didn't go all out decorating. We should have decorated a little more.
I didn't know that was included in your.
I didn't know they were going to factor total. In. Yeah. If they hadn't have factored in the booth set up, we'd have beat everybody by 60, 70 points. Maybe that's why they figured it up like that. Can't let these guys come in there and win. We won 2 first place, though.
Yeah.
Third. I think it was third overall. Day. We had a great day.
This morning you said, I sure would like some chicken quarters.
Yeah. I saw someone post, I don't remember who it was in the community. They posted they were cooking chicken quarters, and it got me to craving them. When's the last time you've had a good chicken quarter?
It's been a minute.
I made up a little chicken rub. It was kind of like kicking chicken quarters. And those things, man, when you can brine them a little bit to get some flavor in them and then dry the skin out and oil it a little bit and season them up and put them on a grill and just, I like cooking them hot, like 400 degrees until they just get crispy almost on the outside. Man, they're good.
I like them because they're so juicy and flavorful. Yep.
That dark meat, man, there's something about it.
So much better
thighs
than
thighs are like that, like boneless, skinless thighs. I love cooking those things.
To me, the chicken quarters is the best part of the chicken. Yeah. Well, wings.
Wings is the best. Yeah.
You can keep those breasts. They're just dry.
Yeah, they don't have no flavor.
Ain't got no flavor.
I wish they was as good as that dark meat.
That's like chicken plate meat.
Yeah.
You get a chicken quarter.
Heck yeah.
Like old school firemen selling chicken plates. But I was wondering, I was like, what? I wrote that on my notes. What got Malcolm thinking about chicken quarters this morning?
I was flipping through the community, checking out what folks are doing. My buddy Dayton's been posted a bunch in there, man. He had a burger question. So let me ask you, I don't know, did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
Do you take your burgers pink on the inside or absolutely no pink?
I mean, where am I getting them from? Are you cooking?
That was what I said. It depends. If it's a, so
we're talking Huey's?
Yeah, yeah. So you go to Huey's.
Huey's is our Memphis, like, best burger place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a local chain.
Is it the absolute best? Yeah, that's arguable. But is it it's the standard, the gold standard. You can cook a burger as good as Huey's, you got a pretty good burger.
I will order my burger medium there.
Because you know what? They get that meat ground, and it comes from Charlie's Meat Market, or it used to. I guess it still does.
I think it still does.
And so you kind of know that they're using good quality. It's certified Angus beef brand too. So they've always used they got the sign up in there, this kind of beef they use. So, you know, it's good quality stuff. And I will order mine a little on the pink side. If I know where that meat's coming from, if I'm grinding the meat myself, making my own ground beef, or when we grind up deer and we make them, oh, medium all day long. I want it medium. I'm not a medium rare burger guy. I'm a medium. But, and so I like seeing some pink. I don't want it red.
I do too.
But if it's like a burger patty that I've just picked up at the grocery store, oh no, I'm cooking that all the way.
I want it all the way.
Even like, I don't even know if I'd cook 80-20 beef from the grocery store. Like if it's just in the package and I didn't know where the grind came from or it's the chub. I'm not going pink. I'm not risking that. I don't want any E. coli. But if I grind it myself, I'm perfectly fine with eating it a little pink.
I like them a little pink inside. They're juicier. They're more flavorful.
See, I got a way to get around, like, and that's one reason why we started doing it. Adding, like, if you go buy a couple pounds of ground beef from Kroger, Walmart, or somewhere in the package, bring it home, you know you got to cook it done because you don't know how that meat was treated before it was ground. Add you a big old dollop of blue plate per pound, like a heaping tablespoon per pound of meat, and work that in. And you ain't got to worry about dry burger. You can cook it to well done, and it's still juicy as it could be. That mayonnaise makes all the difference.
What? Why do they say don't overwork your meat?
Because it gets packy. Like, you know the difference, the kind of the texture. I mean, I try to – now I got me a little burger press. I think it works better because I'll just make a ball and put it in the burger press and lightly and, you know, press it down, and it forms the patty. But what you're talking about is like – seasoning it up and then working it in your hands, yeah, kind of like patting it all. Yeah, like you do meatloaf. And that's the texture you get. You know how that texture, it's more packy.
Yeah.
And it toughens the meat up some working it. I like my burger just to barely be holding together, you know, because you don't want it crumbling apart where you can't flip it or anything, but you want it to work it as least as possible.
Do you
so
add,
the texture is better in the meat.
Do you ever put seasonings or is it just the meat?
Most of the time I don't season it prior. I just don't. I usually leave my seasoning on the outside of the burger. But, I mean, I guess you could eat it with a little something if you wanted to.
any onions or
no,
cheese or
no,
anything.
No, I'm not
there.
Making mama burger. So that's what Eddie Murphy said. You make a mama burger. You got peppers. McDonald's ain't got no peppers. Green onions.
That's basically meatloaf on a bun.
You're making a meatloaf, yeah. On light bread.
What do you think, Tyler? Are you a pink in your burger kind of guy?
Yeah, I'm more like medium well. So like if there's a little bit of pink in there, I'm good. Like all of my wife's burgers, I'm taking up to well done, regardless, no matter what, no matter if I know where it's coming from. But if it's like those frozen, like cheap patties you buy.
Bubba Burgers.
Like Bubba yeah. Burgers.
Or like Bubba Burgers, like but then they also just have like the 80-20, but they're frozen or whatever yeah. in the freezer section. All of that's got to come up to well done.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'm not down for that, but.
I'm cooking that to 145.
145?
Yeah.
That's what you can do.
That's
well
done. Yeah. What's well done to you? You're going to 165?
Yeah.
That's a little too far.
Yeah. 145. Like the way you think.
145.
As long as there's no pink in the middle, then yeah. I think you're good. But if I'm going to Huey's, I'm going Midwell. That's where I'm at.
Midwell.
Yeah. I feel like you still get some of the juice, but it's not like, it's not completely dried out to a crisp and there's a little bit of pink in the center. So
if I'm going, most of the time, if I'm doing a burger, like well done, like I know I want it, I'm doing smash burger.
Yeah.
That way it's flattened out. You get all the crispiness to it and it ain't going to be dry because you have so much cheese on it. But that's if I'm a,
that's
if I know
more of
I'm,
a, yeah. you get the texture, greasy deliciousness.
Yeah, there. Of yeah. doing that. But like just to, if I'm grilling it, I really want to know where that beef comes from. I just like to get a good ground chuck.
Whenever I have those frozen patties, a lot of times, especially if we're feeding people, like a lot of people, I'll throw them on the smoker, like the pellet grill.
Oh, it's too easy.
Oh, it's so good.
The only thing, you better clean that grill after you do, before you do it and after you do it, because you are fixing to make some drippings.
Could you like? Catch them, put like a, put them on the top rack and put a pan underneath.
Yeah, so you could even cook it on like a raised rack over a sheet pan with foil. That'd be a better way to do it to keep your grill from getting too nasty. But yeah, that's a surefire way. Whenever people tell me their pellet grill caught on fire, it's usually because they cooked burgers on it.
Or pork butt.
And didn't clean it and cooked a pork butt, or they cooked a like an overnight pork butt. And then they cranked it up to do burgers. And
it's, is that and combination?
It's
that,
yeah,
in some,
it's
way.
Some combination. Because you think about it, a pellet grill, most of them have some kind of heat diverter, but it doesn't cover the whole bottom of the grill. It leaves gaps to the heat and the smoke and everything can get up. Well, when they load it up with burgers, they put it out on every square inch of the cooking grate, and it might be over the drip area. It might be closer to the fire. It might be to where it can drip. It ain't even hitting the diverter. And that's what getting down in there and getting to that fire is what causes it. That's why you get those burns, those big flames.
It happens.
It happens. Shell's done it. Oh, try it with a Wagyu burger. You better be catching the grease some kind of way, man. Those things make so much grease that it ain't funny. It'll burn your house down.
That's what Cheyenne was saying. They had to, their pellet grill caught on fire. They had to pull it out from underneath the port.
You better.
She was worried that their house was fixed to catch on fire.
Now, whatever you do, just get it unplugged and get it out away from the house and don't open the lid. Just let it do its thing and hope it don't burn back. If it burns back, you ain't got much option. You need to dump the pellets quick.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You don't want it to burn back in there because I've caught a Yoder on fire. It burned back on me and got up in the hopper and I still had it loaded and I didn't have a way to dump them. I just got me old plastic Lenny's cup and went scooping,
while it was on fire.
The pellets weren't, they were smoking out of the hopper, but I guess it was in the tube burning back. And I knew that if it ever caught to it and it still had enough air going, that was fixing to be an inferno. So I went to getting pellets out quick as I could. Then I had to clean the whole thing and let it run. I mean, it's okay. It just happened, pellets backed up on me.
Well, Easter's this weekend.
It is. It's a big mayonnaise holiday, wouldn't you say? People make a lot of creamy salads on Easter. Deviled eggs. You can't make deviled eggs without mayonnaise.
I bet I go through a couple jars
on a
big holiday weekend.
That Thanksgiving, that's your main ones for using mayonnaise, I'd say.
But I always use Blue Plate.
Always. Choose the best. Real mayonnaise quality since 1927.
Hashtag spread the love.
But what else, when you think of Easter, what are you thinking of? Ham?
So smoked ham is the obvious.
Gotta have it.
Yeah. It's like the easiest thing to cook, would you say?
Oh, yeah. That and bologna. Those are the two. You can't mess up a ham or a chub of bologna. You think it's because they're already fully cooked? You could really just eat them cold if you wanted to.
Yeah.
There's nothing really. You're just warming it up on a smoker, basically.
Have you ever seen anybody screw up a ham?
I've seen some people screw up some bologna. Jamie Williams. No, he wasn't his fault. We put bologna on the grill one time at Memphis in May, and we must have cooked it for 12 hours. By the time we went back to the grill, somebody said, this grill's still on. And I said, oh, man, that was the bologna. And it was dark, man. It was charcoal. Dry. We turned bologna into charcoal. It might have had, like you talk about pink in the middle, it might have had one, you know, like tube right through the middle that was still looked like bologna. The rest of it was black as it could be, like coal.
Did y'all cut it open and see?
Oh, yeah. I had to cut it and see what it was like. It was nothing you could salvage on it. I was going to glaze it and everything. And I just smooth forgot about the bologna on the grill.
Well,
you can ruin it.
That made it. That's when we started making schedules.
Yeah.
Bologna comes on, goes on.
Comes
bologna
on.
Comes off.
Set alarm. It's easy to get distracted.
It's so easy to get distracted out there in Memphis, May. There's a lot going on. You're setting up. You're doing this. Mm-hmm. You're talking to people. You're having some drinks.
Bullfrog. I got to give a shout out to my new friends at Sinkfields. They were cooking with the Waste Pro team, and they came over and said they've been watching videos of ours for a long time and stuff, but he was cooking some bison ribeyes, and he brought me some to try to turn in. They were fantastic, but he brought me two of those bison ribeyes. He said he got them somewhere. I think it was in Minnesota or somewhere, but they were fantastic. They were really good, so shout out to Sinkfields.
So would you cook bison ribeyes for Easter?
That really wouldn't be an Easter thing, would it?
You did Easter brisket.
Yeah, and I think about brisket on Easter. I think that's something that a lot of people cook brisket. You know, it's probably a lot of an oven cook, but
yeah.
You know, us people that like to fire up smoke, there's a lot of brisket for Easter.
I mean, brisket does kind of make sense. You can use gravy, serve it with mashed potatoes.
I was going to say, I got an Easter brisket recipe. It's not like your traditional smoked brisket. It's just done on a smoker, but I did it like gravy style brisket.
Yeah.
With the vegetables.
You put a little wine and tomato puree in the wrap.
Fancy it up a little bit.
It was really good.
Kind of like cooking like really good short ribs, but you just do it on a brisket.
So Mark on the community asked a question.
Okay.
He's toying with the idea of injecting his ham with the sweet barbecue sauce. He's basically just putting a glaze on the inside.
Yeah.
Would you do it?
I probably wouldn't. But just simply because that meat's already been fully cooked. And if you know the texture of ham, when they cure it, it's really tight texture.
It's not so really going to spread.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to spread really well when you put it in there. I think what you're going to end up doing is if you can get some of it to stay in the ham, it's just going to be pockets of an injection. It's not going to do, I don't think it's going to do what you think. Once that texture of that meat's been changed so much from the curing process and smoking process, it's not going to take the injection
absorb
the way you want it to. You're better off using that glaze on the outside. Or when you slice it up, brush the slices. You know, if you want to get that flavor in there, you could do that as you sliced it. But I probably wouldn't try to inject it like that. Could be wrong. Let me know how it turns out. But I've never tried it. But that's
a good observation.
Point. I don't think it would take it.
It's a completely different texture. It's not like a raw meat.
Yeah, it's not a raw meat texture. Like if you had a green ham, you could inject it and smoke it. Now it's going to be more like pork roast or, you know, pulled pork. But I have seen people take green hams and smoke them and then slice them for the holidays.
I remember somebody.
It's hard to find just a green ham, a ham that hadn't been cured or smoked or anything. Just the rear leg quarter off a hog.
I still remember someone emailed in and asked a question. This has been years ago. They said they were going to cook a whole hog, and they were thinking they were going to have this much ham for slicing and this much bacon for this. Like they were thinking it was going to come
turn
off
out just
that
like
ham or come off that hog as, you know,
these
cured pieces.
Yeah.
And we're going to have this much sausage. We're going to use it for breakfast. I'm like,
it ain't going to work like that.
It
doesn't work like that.
Pretty much just all pulled meat when
every
you get it off
it.
The
yeah, when it's hog. Cooked right. Now you could chop it and you probably could slice some of it if you didn't, you know, took certain areas, you know, to not a highest temperature. But it's going to be more like roasted pork if you do that.
Part of me wonders if that was a joke question. Like they're just screwing
with
us.
I don't think so. I just think, you know, some people have never done it. Probably don't know.
Yeah.
There's no bad. I've always said there's no bad or dumb questions if you don't know.
We've also done smoked crab legs for Easter before.
Yeah, that's something different that's really good, man.
I like it.
Like, I love me some steamed crab legs. I love me some boiled crab legs. But those grilled ones, and what makes them so good is you're just constantly basting them with the little garlicky, herby butter mixture with a little lemon juice in it. And then the pores on that crab shell just kind of absorb it. And you think, oh, it's not going to get in the meat. No. It picks up flavors from the grill, from the smoke.
It does.
It picks up the buttering, the seasoningness from it. And it's just, and what I like about doing it on especially a pellet grill, is that pellet grill is moving so much air that the outside shell is getting kind of brittle. So it makes cracking them and getting to the meat really, really easy. And you can do it in like 30 minutes. It doesn't take long on the grill because those crab legs are fully cooked when you get them. They're fully, they take them off the boat. I guess they throw them in some hot water right there, and they shock freeze them, and so they're cooked. You just got to warm them back up, and that's why you can steam them or just drop them in some boiling water. You don't really have to boil them. You're just reheating them in that water.
Does it mess with your smoker at all? Like,
no. I always thought that, and I would say, oh, I don't want to put any kind of nasty or, you know, fishy smell in something that's going to leave some kind of residue because it's going to mess up the seasoning on my pit. I've never noticed that the doing crab legs on it has done anything to an off flavor or anything to the grill after I've been done. Never. So I'm not scared to do it.
You just throw them on their froze.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times. Yeah. I just go buy them and put them right on out of the box and just have their butter melted and ready. And it'll kind of coagulate up because they're cold. But as they thaw out, they're releasing a lot of that moisture from being froze, and they kind of self base themselves a little bit, and they're steaming because they're getting hot. And it's really a great way to do crab legs if you've never done them.
And I think they get way more flavor.
Yeah, they do get more flavor.
I don't know if it's because I'm eating it and, you know, using my hands to eat, and I'm getting all the butteriness off the shell.
That probably has something to do with it too, but
either way,
it's nothing but goodness.
What do you like better, smoked crab legs, boiled crab legs, steamed crab legs?
Probably smoked. I'm really good.
Me too.
You don't. I mean, I only get them when I cook them. I don't know anywhere else that does that. You know,
with
like a
smoke.
restaurant-wise, yeah. But most of the times you get them in a restaurant, they're steamed. Now, they're big into doing these bowl in the bags now. I've seen there's a lot of those restaurants popped up, but the only place, let's see.
They're not as good.
Hold on. Would I take my grilled crab leg over the steamer in Orange Beach? I would probably go to the steamer.
Well, that way.
I don't know. It's the experience or whatever. When I think of, like, you tell me, where's the best crab legs you ever had? Man, that steamer in Orange Beach, Alabama is pretty dang good. And you know those are froze crab legs. They're not getting snow crab out of the Gulf like that.
No.
Those came from Alaska somewhere, you know, Bering Sea. But, man, they're good. Because they're big old crab legs. Now, we've got a place in Horn Lake that sells a crab leg that rivals it, that Crawfish Haven up there. That's where I buy mine when we're going to do a crawfish bowl. I always throw some crab legs in there. Or if I'm going to buy some and cook for my mom on the grill, I'll buy them there. They sell them in clusters.
Do they sell them cooked already? Cooked.
I mean, they're fully cooked, froze.
I mean, ready to eat.
Oh.
Hot and ready to eat. Do they ever sell them?
Yeah. You can go there and buy like a crab leg dinner. I don't know if they boil them or they steam. I bet they steam them.
Yeah.
I've always done them myself. I don't usually, when I buy from them, I'm buying either raw or live crawfish. They're shrimp. They've got some shrimp that I like too. I never ask where they come from.
Crab legs and shrimp. Every time you do crab legs, you always buy the shrimp too.
You have to. Why not?
That's a heck of an Easter dinner. It's not traditional.
Oh, go get you a box of crab legs and get you a bunch of shrimp. Throw them in a pan with the butter. I've started throwing them in froze too.
What? Your shrimp?
The shrimp. Just a big full-size pan. I'll melt me a couple sticks of butter, mix some lemon juice in with it and some Cajun seasonings and maybe some fresh parsley. And then mix all that up and just pour it all over those froze shrimp in the pan and stick them in the pit. In about 10 minutes, those juggers are going to be thawed out, and you go stir them a little bit. Let them go another 10 minutes, stir them a little bit, another 10 minutes and 30 minutes total. They are perfect. And it's like you get those shrimp, and it's great because all the pan catches all that butter and everything, and I pour that up, and that's the dipping sauce for eating the shrimp. And it's like, man, you can make yourself sick. Off those buttery shrimp and crab legs. And the best part's dipping a crusty bread in that butter.
Yeah, you got to have the crusty bread.
Oh, yeah.
I know some people, Stale Cracker was like, I can't believe you cooked shrimp for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it's not how you think.
It's not how you think, yeah.
It's really slow, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, really.
They're not overcooked.
No, not at all. They're perfectly cooked. Yeah. The texture is perfectly cooked. And when we boil shrimp, we don't cook them that long. They go, like, they usually go in when we kill the fire. So, you know, your pot's boiling, it's 212 degrees. You kill your fire, you throw your shrimp in and just let them soak a little bit. And you'll notice, you'll know a shrimp's done when about four of them start floating to the top. That's when it's like, all right, we got to get all this shrimp out. And the texture of them will just pop and they're perfectly cooked. When they start, when you see a few of them start floating, if you wait till all of them float, they're overcooked. But you catch them and just a few of them start releasing and going to the top of the water, that's when they're done.
To me, the popping is how I know it's
perfectly cooked. Texture of a shrimp. Yeah. How would you, so you've had a shrimp where you bite into it and it's leathery, it's tough.
Mushy.
Yeah. Ugh. It doesn't have a little snap to it. You want it to have
all
just
the flavors gone.
Yeah.
It's like chewed gum or something, you know?
It's bad texture.
Yeah.
I'm a texture person on seafood. It's got to be just right. You know, and that's what, you can really get some bad seafood. Now, that's the one thing to me. It's probably one of the more challenging things to cook is to be able to learn to cook fish and seafood right.
That one's always
a lot harder than pork.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder than pork.
You've always struggled.
Yeah. It took me a lot of years to figure out how to do it right. There wasn't nobody telling you back then.
So we did have a question in the community about smoked crab, but this is about Dungeness. So what's the Dungeness crab?
I don't know if I've ever had, like, I've never cooked Dungeness crab. I've cooked blue crab.
Let me see.
But are Dungeness the big wide ones?
I'm pulling them up.
Let me see. Yeah, it's a big wide crab. I've seen them. I've never really messed with those.
But he said he...
I think of Joe's Crab Shack when I see that. Yeah. Dungeness crab.
$2.50 for half an hour, basting every 5 to 10 minutes. But he said the crab was overpowered by the smoke flavor.
Really? Might have been too heavy on smoke. Depends on what kind of smoker it was, too. Like, if you throw chunks of wood and stuff. Like, if I'm cooking crab legs on a grill, like, a Weber or a drum, I'm not adding any smoke. I'm just letting the charcoal do the flavoring because it's going to be plenty. And in a pellet grill, you know, I usually do it at about 300, 350 degrees, so it's cooking a little hotter. You don't get a ton of smoke at those temperatures. It's like an outdoor oven at that point. You get some. That does have grilled flavor, but I've never had them to where it was overpowered at all.
And you've done them on the old hickory before.
Yeah,
too.
And it doesn't, and I'll use the gas assist on it.
Oh, really?
Or either charcoal and don't put any wood in it, so it's burning clean, too. It's all about a clean fire, because you don't, and see, like seafood is so delicate that it's going to absorb a lot of smoke flavor. So you can't use a whole lot of wood on it, or it's going to taste overpowered. It's a real delicate meat. So just, you got to think about that. I usually don't try not to overseason it. I use a lot of butter,
a lot of butter,
a little citrus,
a lot of butter. And that's how it's good.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Shrimp cooked in butter is one of the better things in life. Like poached butter shrimp. Oh, man.
And then re-dip it in shrimp before you eat it. Well, Mount, we need to take a quick break, pay some bills.
Let's pay some. The How to Barbecue Right podcast is brought to you by our friends at Primo Grills. Shell, did you know that Primo is the only ceramic grill made right here in the good old USA?
What? Are you telling me that Primo Grills are proudly crafted here in the USA, ensuring top-notch quality and support for local craftsmanship?
I sure am. Plus, Primo Grill not only delivers mouth-watering flavor, but because of their innovative oval design and superior ceramic construction, Primo Grills also gives you a ton of cooking versatility.
Whether you're smoking low and slow or searing a steak to perfection, Primo Grills gives you the consistent heat distribution for mouth-watering results every time.
What she said, y'all. Y'all visit PrimoGrill.com and check them out.
Also on the community, I saw Ethan had posted. He had a big old pile of wood in front of his smoker. So I started thinking, like, about sourcing wood and how you source wood and where you find wood. And that's kind of a tricky
thing. It can be, yeah, for sure. It's, I mean, I guess if you're from an area that doesn't have a lot of different
It's good not wood. Easy to get it shipped.
Well, the problem is you can find places to order it online. But it's all been kiln drying, and they have to do that so states will let them ship it across state lines because they don't want to risk there being any bugs or anything in it that's going to introduce it to another region, you know, maybe cause a problem with the trees or anything they have. So they say you got to dry it out. And kiln drying, I mean, it's like a big oven. They put the wood in there and they really like hammer it with heat to take the moisture content out of it. I guess it kills anything else.
Yeah.
I guess the high heat. And then they sell it. So this wood that you see like in your academies or your Home Depots or Lowe's or anywhere like that, Walmarts, that's all been kiln drying. What I like to smoke with is local wood. So here in Mississippi, we have really great access to hickory, to wild cherry, to pecan, to oak. Those are the four main species that you'll see me smoking with.
Because that's what you have that access to.
Because that's what we have access to. It's really great cooking wood. Out in Texas, they got a lot of post oak. They got a lot of pecan. They got the mesquite. So that's why they use that. So wood's kind of regional to me. And a lot of times the barbecue is in those areas because that's what the pitmasters have cooked it with. So it just happens to be hickory's pretty commonly found and oak's really commonly found. So you see that used a lot. But your fruit woods, like your apples and your peaches and cherries, those make excellent smoking woods for getting flavor.
Where do you find local wood?
I mean, I mean, if you can find a tree service, a lot of times those guys will sell cooking wood too on the side. That's a good place. Some of your stores that sells grills and stuff, they source local wood. There'll be somebody that comes and sells them.
Barbecue shop, yeah.
We've had a guy here that would come to the shop and, you know, we could buy, he would already bundle it up for resale. And it was some stuff that he wouldn't cut. People will have those trees go down in their yards or that, you know, they'll need somebody to remove them so that they see a good species of tree that they know they could sell for cooking wood. A lot of those guys will put it to the side and stuff and sell it. In a pinch, I've cooked with those wood chunks that you buy at the store. I've cooked with those splits. I'm not scared to. You don't – like, the dry wood is great for BTUs. It's great for heat. It doesn't give you as much smoke flavor because the moisture has been cooked out of it. It's been dried out of
it. So you're saying the kiln wood
– Yeah.
Dried.
Yeah, it's been super dried, so you don't get as much smoke from it. It'll go right to fire, right to flame first. It's great for running in a stick burner because it gives you a good heat. It's not as great for flavoring. You really want a greener wood, which greener just means it has a higher moisture content. It hasn't been seasoned as long. And so
is there a magic number?
I've seen people say like you want wood that's got like 18-20% moisture content for flavor. For your dry wood, they want down to as low as 15%, but I never get caught up in those numbers of it. I just kind of know where my wood comes from and know what I'm doing with it. Often when you see us cook, I'm not running a stick burner. I'm burning on a bed of coal. So that's my main heat. So I don't have to use that really, really dry wood. I'd like to have a little greener wood because I'm just adding enough wood to give me some smoke flavor. And, when we first started cooking, everybody, like you go to these barbecue contests and everybody have a 5-gallon bucket full of wood yeah. and they fill it up with water and soak in it, trying to rehydrate it to get it to last longer, get it to smoke more. It doesn't really work like that. Once you've had that wood seasoning, hydrating it back in water is not going to add that much. What it's going to do is going to make it steam more. So you're really not getting any more smoke flavor out of it doing it that way. So you just need to know. I mean, if you're serious about it and you really think that you're playing with these wood flavors and you want to get the best, go outsource you some local wood and then, get you a little moisture meter and dry it till, and then go to cooking with it. So
I bought you a moisture meter for Christmas.
I've used it too. Just to check. I mean, it's not something I'm not going to cook with this because it's 90% moisture or whatever. It was just interesting for me to see see what it burns like. I mean, like some green wood, so if you went down and cut down a tree and you went to smoking with it, yeah, you could use it. I've had some cherry off a tree that was cut down that same week, but it's a lot stronger because it hasn't had time to lay on the ground, hasn't had time to dry out any. It has a lot more moisture in it. So it's going to give you a thicker smoke. It's going to be a lot stronger flavor, and you will over smoke stuff too. So you just have to take all that into account. Because
when you're cooking, when you're heating it, you're having to cook off the moisture.
Yeah, and some of those impurities come with it and mixing your smoke, and it can give you some bad flavors. And so that's why you want it somewhat seasoned. You don't want it completely dry. But.
I remember when you first started cooking, everybody was soaking wood.
Everybody. That's how we did it.
It was like a thing.
We would go buy, sticks of wood or whatever, or chunks, and we'd put them in a bucket and fill it up with water. That was the first thing you did at a contest, get your wood soaking. And then when you added it on, it would go to steaming and sizzling, and it'd make that white thick smoke, and you're cooking all that steam off that wood where you had it in the water.
But nobody does that anymore.
No, you don't see
it
anymore.
I don't even hear people talk about it. Mm.
I guess people kind of realize nobody was talking about why they did it. They were just doing it because they saw somebody else do it.
Why'd you do it?
Because I saw Wayne Booth doing it. He soaked all his wood. John Wheeler, they were sucking all their wood. So.
They were the top dogs back then. That's right. Have you ever made your own charcoal?
No. Why? I mean, I guess it was the apocalyptic times. You did come in handy, but I'm not taking the time to make me 50 pounds of charcoal. It'd take 2 days to do it.
What do you do?
I mean, most of the guys I've seen do it, they use like these big drums or something like that. And so they'll have one drum they fill up with wood that's kind of on top of another drum they're building the fire in. They get it all burning and get it going. And then they snuff it out. They let it sit there and smolder until everything cooks off and it cooks down into coals. And what's left is the charcoal. It's a process.
Do you use wet wood or dry wood in that?
They just throw wood in there.
It doesn't matter. I don't know
what all they're putting in there, but that's how it's a process like that or something.
So basically,
man, as long as Royal Oak can make it, I'm going to let them have at it. I'll use theirs. That's too involved to make your own charcoal. You're not getting a bang for your buck.
That's a lot of wood. You'd have to source it.
When they make the charcoal, like the charcoal plants, you got to think they've got like these 18-wheeler looking trailers that are their ovens. But they're putting wood in there, and, you know, they're putting it in there by the front end loader load and then lighting it on fire and putting it out. So they're making tonnage. You can't do that at home. I mean, you could probably make 50 pounds at a time or something like that. I'd burn that up and, you know, you could burn that up in a day.
Yeah.
And you got to go back 2 more days and make charcoal again. You'd have to get a procedure and process going down for it.
You know how people will complain like, oh, I found a rock in my bag of charcoal. Is that just because it's.
Yeah, they're scooping up wood with a front end loader and throwing it in. I mean, they try to keep it as clean as they can, I promise you, but it ain't like they go in there and throw a handful of screws or bricks and whatever they want in it.
Yeah, it just happens sometimes.
It just happens, yeah. I found all kinds of stuff in charcoal, not just Royal Oak charcoal. I mean, you know, there's sometimes you find these metal straps, I guess, where they've had the trees strapped up, or I found nails, I found pieces of rock. I mean, I found all kinds of stuff in it. Nothing ever really valuable.
Yeah. Would be burnt up.
It'd be burnt up, yeah.
Have you ever gone to one of those plants and seen?
No, I've never been to one. That would be pretty cool to go to one, take a tour of how charcoal's made.
But you'd stink when you leave.
Oh, yeah. How'd you like to have that job? But that's a dirty job.
Shoveling coal.
Bagging coal.
Surely they got a machine, right?
Sure, I hope so. It started somewhere. You know, I think when the Henry Ford that started like Kingsford Charcoal, it was a Ford that started Kingsford Charcoal. I don't know if it was Henry, but.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I guess it was in Michigan.
Someone from the community asked if you'd ever had any experience using red oak.
I've used it. It's just, I mean, we just call it oak. I mean,
I know
there's all different kinds of species, but I've cooked with oak. I'm sure it was either red oak or pin oak or white oak or something like that. It's a pretty common species of oak wood.
They were saying they don't have access to post oak, so they were wondering if they could use it.
You could use it. And honestly, I don't know if I could tell the difference between post oak and oak if it was cooked.
All right. Honestly, can you tell the difference if you're using like a cherry wood?
Definitely. Apple. The fruit woods, I can definitely pick up
on. You can pick up on.
Because they give it different flavors and different looks. Like, you know, it's a different, sweeter flavor. Peach is one that's really, you know, if you cook with something with peach wood, you can pick it out. Apple's kind of mild, but it's a little sweet. So you can usually say, oh, that's probably got some fruit wood. But then cherry drives that pink color. You know, you get really good color from it, and it has its own unique sweetness too. Those are the three that I could probably really pick out. Now, the predominant one that just about anybody should be able to tell you is something that's smoked with mesquite. You're going to know that's mesquite wood. It just has its own unique bitterness to it.
I was going to say that. I don't know if I could pick out, like, is that cherry? Is that apple?
Oak,
is that
like, say, oak and hickory and even probably pecan. Those would be pretty hard to distinguish. You could line up three different things, cook with three different, most people probably wouldn't even be able to tell. And I doubt I probably would. But if it had the fruit wood, I think I could find it every time. And then most of the fruit woods, I think I could tell you which one was which.
Do you have a preference?
Man, I've always used pecan, hickory, and cherry. Those are my three, and I like to mix them. But, I'm not scared to use some oak and apple, or if I'm going over to Georgia, I usually throw in a little peach. But the three, the cherry, the pecan, and the hickory, is a good wood combination.
Do you make any changes if you're cooking over in Texas?
pecan. You see what I roll over there?
You don't do
post oak, some, but no, I never do mesquite.
Do you not? I never like do mesquite?
I don't like mesquite. I don't like it. I know everybody says, oh, I'll do a mesquite smoked turkey breast or whatever. And it's like, go ahead.
You did.
I did. It's, I mean, it's okay, but it's not near as good as the other three I mentioned. To me, that's just my, but that's my personal taste. If you grew up eating mesquite, that's probably when you think of it or taste it, that's what, man, that takes me back to being a kid. That's the way barbecue's supposed to taste. Well, it's because you grew up with it. So you like it.
So it's just personal. Personal
that's it,
preference.
That's it.
So I got some questions for you.
I don't even know if Texans really use mesquite. I think they started telling the Yankees that were coming down. They got plenty of wood for you. Use that mesquite wood. And it's just
oh, yeah, that's what we use.
Growing wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
Y'all use that. We'll use this oak and pecan we got. I mean, how many of those restaurants, you know, the famous ones over in Texas, do you think burn mesquite wood? Probably not many, if any. It's just something you don't do.
So, got some questions from the community.
All right.
Jeff. He recently picked up a New York strip slab from Costco.
Like a whole strip loin.
Okay. So that's like a prime rib, but strip. Okay.
It's like a ribeye loin, but it's the strip. It's back further. A little back further on the cow.
So you've cooked that before.
Yeah. Oh, they're great. They're fantastic. I cook them like prime rib.
Yeah. You cook just like prime rib. So his question was, can he cook it like a brisket?
You can, but I wouldn't. It's going to dry out. I mean, it's going to be dry. It just is. I mean, it's not a good cut of beef. I mean, why ruin it?
You said that about doing a tri-tip brisket style, and it.
I did say that, and it worked. I just
was it as good as like rare tri-tip?
No,
but it was pretty.
You could
good.
Cook it like that. You can, and there, you could cook. You know, you could cook it like it. I just know from experience cooking a ribeye too long is not. It just wasted a ribeye, and the strip's going to be leaner than the ribeye.
Have you ever taken a ribeye up to like 202?
Not on purpose. Not on purpose. It's not, you're wasting the meat. Don't pay that much money if you're going to cook something like that. You're much better off cooking a chuck roast like a brisket and slicing it or, you know, something that's a cheaper, less expensive cut of beef.
So you think Jeff should cook it like a prime rib?
I would. I'd cook it like a prime rib, and they're fantastic. They're phenomenal.
They are good. We did that for Christmas one year. Instead of a prime rib, we did a strip.
Yep. Strip loin. They're good. They're really good. And it's cheaper than a ribeye, usually. Should be.
Eric asks, is it worthwhile to inject a prime grade brisket flat?
For a competition, I would. Every time, all day long. For cooking at home, I usually don't even inject my brisket. I don't think it needs it. I'm not trying to jazz up one bite. I'm trying to
enjoy a
whole
meal.
Yeah, eat that whole flat.
Well, what would you get what would be the purpose of injecting?
It just puts more flavor in it, puts more moisture in it. So if you're going from that standpoint, if you just want to do it to make sure you know to add some more moisture to it, just go with something simple like a little beef broth, a simple injection. But if you want to start, you know, if you're trying to get it to retain moisture and you're trying to get this super rich flavor and, you know, you're doing it more comp style, you could buy like a commercial beef injection or something like that, you know, something out there to add it to it. A lot of times they have, you know, moisture,
phosphates
and stuff in them that's going to help them retain moisture, and it changes, you know, somewhat changes the texture a little bit.
Changes the flavor a little bit too. Yep. I think it takes away from like the natural beefiness natural porkiness, whatever you're cooking.
By injecting.
Yeah.
It's very rare that I inject anything I'm cooking just at home to eat. I don't care for it. I want to taste the meat. I don't want to try to cover it up. I want to use my seasonings and the smoke. And if I do put a sauce on it, put a sauce at the end, you know, but try to keep it more natural. I don't think I gain that much from, you know, the moisture level, because usually a prime one's got enough fat in it to where it's not going to dry out as much as a choice one would. So you shouldn't really, the moisture is not really a problem there.
Why do you inject for contests?
Because the judge is only taking one bite of it often, and I want it packed full of every bit I can get in it. All the moisture, all the flavor, all the richness, all the texture. I want it all right in one bite. But that's not barbecue you sit there and make a meal off of. You're cooking it for that judge to take one bite of it. That's why we do it. And we do it because everybody else does. Fall in line, right? Don't get outside the box. Just do perfect inside the box.
That's what competition cooking's about.
It is.
Jordan asks, so he's been cooking baby back ribs. Every time he cooks them, the lighter, more lean meat on the top is always drier and tougher than the darker meat in between the ribs.
Yep.
They're still okay. It's just not ideal.
That's right. Because it's got that loin still attached to it. It all depends on how they trim that slab of baby back or loin back ribs out. If they leave that part of it on top, and the loin's a leaner meat, different muscle. And so it does. It kind of dries out some. Now
it gets a little barky.
You can trim it off. A lot of times in contests, if it's too heavy, we'll trim it off. But a lot of times we use it to our advantage. And we call it the rib bacon because it makes long strips. And when you go up under it easy, you can take that off and show a judge, look, I got bacon on top of my rib or whatever. It's not bacon at all. It's loin meat. But it makes a nice little bark on top. But it is a definite, different texture.
It's chewier.
It's chewier, yeah. It's good, and I don't mind it on mine, but I don't want a big piece of loin on top of it.
So he's just asking, is this normal?
It's very softer? Normal. I mean, you can cook it to where it's soft, too. It depends on how long, when you put it in the wrap, how long you leave it in the wrap, what you got in that wrap, that makes it tender. Resting at the end softens it up some. Like, if you're cooking those ribs and you're glazing them as soon as they come out of the wrap, then you're serving them right after that, of course, that meat's going to be a little tougher. But once it sits upside down, that loin meat down in that rib liquid that's in that full pack, and then you let it rest for, an hour or two after they get done before you glaze them, that softens it up. So you can do some things to make that texture soft.
I feel like resting is your answer for almost everything.
Yeah, why is that?
The importance of resting.
Because it is important. It's very important.
Yeah.
We talked about that last week.
Do you feel like that was a big epiphany for you when you realized?
In competition cooking, definitely. I mean, even in better quality food at home. But I just think most of the time when we're cooking at home, we don't factor in a rest, so we don't think about it. It's like, I spent a long time cooking this. I know I'm probably going to feed and get some folks ready to eat. And so they're, it's ready. It's like, let's eat now.
Yeah.
Let's don't let it rest. And so you don't oftentimes. But if you work that in from the beginning, okay, it's going to take me an extra 2 hours, just whatever time it normally takes. But
you've learned, you do that now.
Oh, I try to now.
Yeah.
I try to be way ahead. I'd rather be way ahead when I'm cooking something for people than I had pushing it right up to the minute. Now, if you're grilling something, that's different.
It's usually steak rest.
Not too long. You like it right off the grill, so you want your steak as hot as you can get it.
I mean,
there's different thoughts on that, different trains of thoughts. Like some people said, you need to give it 7 to 10 minutes before you cut into it to let those juices. And some people say that makes absolutely no difference. You cook it, you eat it as soon as it comes off the heat. So I guess it's up to you. I really don't mind. Like, I mean, if I cook me a ribeye and I take it to my plate and I go sit down and I start cutting it, yeah, some juice might run out in my plate, but that's what I'm sopping back up when I'm eating it,
I'm running my meat through it. My potatoes getting some of it.
Yeah, everything's getting some of that. So I don't mind it. It's not as important to me as resting a brisket or resting some ribs or a pork butt for that matter.
Anything big?
Yeah, anything big.
All right, one more for you before I let you go.
All right.
Kirk asks, he's thinking about a pellet smoker. He's narrowed it down. He's interested in a Rectech or Pit Boss.
I've never cooked on either one, actually. But if I had to pick... It would depend on which one I could get for the same price point that was bigger. That's the brand wouldn't decide me on those two. It's bang for buck, size for the money.
You want capacity?
As I think they're about equal. I mean, you've got a bunch of different grills at that level. So what's going to come down to is price point. If they're the exact same price point for the exact same size grill, I might go Rectech.
Yeah.
I might go Pit Boss tomorrow. I don't know. I ain't cooked on either one of them. So
my dad's got a Rectech, and it's like a cooking machine. I've cooked on it twice, and both times, I mean, no problems. Meat tasted amazing. Huge hopper on the back. I don't know what the exact model is. It has like bull horns for handles. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it has like a 40-pound hopper in the back or something like that. It's ridiculous.
You like it better than your Traeger?
I haven't cooked on it enough to say that. No.
I know my parents, Waylon, actually won a Rectech down at the shed. And he gave it to my parents. And my dad cooks on it, and he says it does great, you know. He's got one of my old Yoders there, the old red one that I used to do videos with, and he's got that Rectech, and I think he fires up that Rectech more than he does the Yoder, just because it's easy. I
mean, and it's newer.
Yeah.
It's got more bells and whistles,
I did give him a Traeger, though, so we'll see what he uses when he gets that Traeger put together.
That's all I got for you, Mount. It's time to start that Easter vacation.
It is. I know everybody's going to be cooking some good stuff for Easter, so y'all take some pictures and share it in that community, man. Let's see some of it.
There might be some crawfish cooking this weekend.
Man, prices shot back up. They had come down a little, but then they shot up like 40, 50 cents. I'm waiting on them after. I'm going to get the cooking crawfish after Easter. Hopefully the prices will start going down.
Oh, let's do that the weekend after Easter.
We got something we got to do that weekend.
You can cook crawfish.
Oh, we've got a chair. We're doing that Hope Outdoors event. Taking some.
But that's on a Saturday. Yeah, you can cook crawfish on Friday.
Might do it. That'd be good.
Y'all cooked crawfish last week, and I didn't get any of it.
I told you to. If y'all haven't seen. So we got a new buddy, Trent Ellis. He's from Mississippi, and he does stuff on. He's doing stuff on YouTube, TikTok, everything. But it's mainly short form comedy content. But he did a long form video on YouTube of cooking us showing him how to cook crawfish. And we were down at a camp doing it. And it's pretty funny.
He's a funny guy. His content's pretty good.
Yeah. He's genuine. And he's just like that, just like he is on his videos. That's how he is in real life. Because he hung out with us at the contest all day. And then I took him turkey hunting on Sunday. And he had me rolling. It was a lot of fun. He walked the dog out of me, too. Like, we chased turkeys all over the place.
You got your steps in that day. I got
my steps in that day. But we had a blast. We didn't get a turkey. We did everything but get the turkey. So it was exciting. But
he's on TikTok. Did you see the TikTok he did about couldn't get it done?
Yeah, I did see that. The funny one was to me, he did one when he first got there. And this joker makes a TikTok in like 15 minutes. But he did one where he started out in the bathroom. And then it's like a little tour of, you know, everything there, a little quick tour
of your farm. Yeah.
It's Trent Ellis, TrentEllis.
Yeah. On TikTok.
I think that's what he goes by on YouTube too, isn't it?
I think
so. You search his name, you'll find it, but it's pretty funny. Y'all go check him out. Subscribe to him because he's funny.
And
it's wholesome humor.
And there's a crawfish recipe ish.
Yeah. Kind of. It's not really a recipe at all. It's more of how to do it wrong. No, the crawfish was fantastic. Like, that was Mark's recipe, and it was, man, he makes this puree up. And that's the first time I've done it with the puree. And it's like a puree, like he takes like two bundles of celery. What do you call it? I call the individual rib, but so it's the stalks. Like two stalks of celery, chops it up, sack of onions, bunch of garlic cloves, and blends all that in like a food processor.
Blender. Yeah.
And then turns it into like a paste. It looks nasty. And then he mixes chicken broth with it and just kind of to thin it out. So it's kind of like this liquidy. It doesn't look good.
Yeah.
It doesn't look good at all. But when you dump it in the pot, it flavors it. So instead of just cutting up onions and cutting up celery and putting it in there and cooking it down and they get all mushy, this stuff kind of disappears when you get it boiling. But you get all that flavor. And then along with the crawfish seasonings and the lemons and the citrus juice and everything, the butter that we put in there, it makes a fantastic pot of crawfish.
I think Mark lays awake in bed at night just thinking like,
so what can you do different?
Yeah. How can I improve my crawfish?
Oh, this time we took, I don't know how many cloves of garlic it was, put them in a mason jar, punched holes in the lid.
This is genius.
Actually, yeah. And then throw it in the pot and then hold it down to where the juice goes through those holes and fills up and the jar sinks and it cooks all that garlic in the pot in the jar, so where you can pull it out and strain it, and then you got all this cooked garlic, and you don't have to dig through, and it doesn't just get mushy and dissolve. It was really, really good. And I love garlic. I love whole cloves of garlic in a crawfish bowl.
I'll throw whole cloves of garlic in my pot roast in the crock pot, you know.
I'll do it when I mash the potatoes. Like, boil some garlic cloves with the potatoes.
But we like garlic.
That's right. So, Tyler, do we have anything? The community, the contest is over. We had some winners, right?
Yeah, so we wrapped that up. We announced the winners this morning or yesterday morning if you're listening to this on Friday. So make sure y'all go over and check that out. We're going to be having some more giveaways really, really soon. So make sure y'all join the Let's Get to Cooking community over on Facebook.com/group/ H2Q community. And it's Easter weekend, so like Malcolm was saying, share your Easter recipes. Let us see what you're cooking, and I know I'm going to be, so.
I want to see the deviled egg pics. Somebody did, somebody posted one. It was like, it's one that I did recently, too, with the old shrimp on top of it.
Yeah. Yours hadn't come out yet.
When's that come out? This week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Today, I think, but.
Oh, it'll be out by the time this goes live.
But yours was a Cajun deviled eggs.
You know, I like putting boiled eggs in the crawfish bowl, too. They're good.
Eh, y'all like it.
You don't like, you just like standard. Give you some sausage and corn and potato, and that's enough.
I really don't even care much for the corn and potato.
Just the sausage? What about the mushrooms?
I want the mushrooms. I want the garlic.
I want it all.
I like the onions. I like the little pearl onions.
You don't like pickles? I like pickles in it.
The pickles are gross in it.
Oh, they're so good. They soak up so much flavor.
Well, if that's all I got for you today, Mel.
Where can they find us, Shell?
If you'd like to connect with Malcolm, it's How to BBQ Right on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and of course YouTube. If you'd like to connect with me, it's Miss Southern Shell on Instagram and TikTok.
All right. Well, we hope everyone has a happy Easter out there.
Happy Easter.
You better go buy them hams if you ain't got them. It's time. We will see y'all next week. We gone.